Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, and that and more we're going to be discussing today. This is Donna Sebo, and I'm so delighted that you're able to join me. If you, like me, are a fan of anything that is related to the paranormal, you are always intrigued by it, curious about it, because it states an expansion of thinking, maybe personal experience, that you really have never, ever imagined could happen to you. What if you were a total skeptic? Well, my guest today, James Stein, who prefers being called Jim, is a man who, as he describes himself, is a real left-brainer, but he has written a book called The Paranormal Equation, and he gets really down to basics about why this is something we should not ignore, because it actually might be something that's very much a part of the real world, but maybe in a different way than we would understand. I want to welcome to the show James D. Stein. Jim, it's a delightful experience having you on the air with me today.
Good morning, Donna. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show.
You're a man that has such an incredible background and experience. You are currently teaching at California State University in Long Beach, and you are very much, as you've described yourself, a left-brain type of guy. You're into mathematics. You love science, physics. This is just where you like to go. How is it that you decided that you wanted to explore the paranormal? What was it that pushed your buttons? Was it that one that had the word skeptic on it in capital letters?
Well, actually, it was a combination of circumstances. The first is I've always been interested in science, but I've always been aware that there have been a lot of top-flight scientists who've either believed in the paranormal or the supernatural, or at least have been willing to investigate it. And that's sort of a little surprising, because you're looking at something that, even though there's a long history of belief in the paranormal and the supernatural, there's really not that much in the way of hard evidence. If there were hard evidence, instead of a few people investigating it, you'd have a ton. That's the first thing that got me interested. The second thing was a doctor friend of mine who we were talking one day, and he said, you know, there are three types of facts in the universe. There are the known facts, the unknown facts, and the unknowable facts. And I sort of puzzled over this one because it's pretty clear what a known fact is. For instance, Mount Everest is the highest mountain on the planet. That's known. We've measured all the mountains, so there's no debating that. And there are unknown facts in the universe, for instance, whether or not there is or has ever been life on Mars. We don't know at the moment, but hopefully at some day we'll go to Mars and find out. But even if we don't, it's a fact whether there was or there wasn't. And we may indeed get around to discovering it. We may not. Hopefully we do. But nonetheless, it's still a fact. And there you have known facts, and there you have unknown facts. But the question that puzzled me was, how could you have unknowable facts? And then a few years ago when I was writing another book, Donna, how do you stand on shameless plugs?
Oh, I don't mind plugs. That's fine.
Oh, okay. The name of the book was How Math Explains the World. And I was writing this book, and all of a sudden it came to me that math had actually come to grip with the problems of the existence of unknowable facts. And one thing I've discovered about mathematics is that when you talk about it, people enjoy it. When you actually compel them to do it, they're not so happy. And so I just want you to know that I'm not going to compel anyone to do it during the course of this interview.
Thanks, babe.
Believe me, sighs of relief for being heard all over radio land. anyway, you have to know just a little something about mathematics. And for instance, balancing your checkbook is arithmetic. But mathematics generally deals with establishing whether or not more general statements are true than whether or not you have enough money in your checking account to cover the checks that you wrote. And general types of statements that you'll see in mathematics, some of your listeners might recall from their geometry courses, is something called the Pythagorean theorem. It's about right triangles. It was discovered 2,500 years ago. And it's a true fact about all right triangles. It's in the form of an equation, but the equation itself doesn't even matter. What matters is that it's a true fact about all right triangles. And you have to establish such a fact logically, because there are infinitely many right triangles, and you can't go about measuring all of them to find out whether or not the fact is true. So you have to come up with a logical argument to prove it. On the other hand, if you want to disprove a statement, all you have to do is find a single example. For instance, suppose I were to make the statement, the sum of two odd numbers is an odd number. Well, you could say, hey, 3 is an odd number, 5 is an odd number. If you add them up, 3 plus 5 is 8. That's not an odd number. So there you, so the statement that the sum of two odd numbers is an odd number is false, because we found something, we found an example that wasn't true. And up until the 1930s, mathematicians thought that all statements about mathematics were of one of two types. It was either true, and you could find a proof for it, like Pythagoras did, or it was false, and you could find a counterexample, like the one I just gave involving 3 plus 5 equals 8. But then in the 1930s, an Austrian mathematician named Kurt Gödel proved something that was absolutely astounding to mathematicians. He proved that in a system in which you had an infinite number of things to look at, there could be true statements which you could not prove. And that just blew mathematics away, because nobody even suspected this at the time. They're what are called undecidable propositions. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me when I was writing the other book a few years ago that this might possibly explain why there are phenomena in the universe that we don't seem to be able to understand fully. Because what might happen is that if the universe is infinite, there might be the equivalent of these unknowable facts from mathematics that would describe relationships between physical parameters, things that we measure, such as mass, length, time, energy, force. And these might actually exist, these relationships, but we'd never be able to prove it. And even though I feel it's unlikely, as things stand, that we will ever find these out or ever know what they are, they may conceivably have an influence on their on our lives, and they may it's possible that they may explain certain types of paranormal phenomena. I don't think that, you know, when people think of paranormal phenomena, it's a very, very wide net. It includes
a wide net.
Oh boy, I'll tell you. I mean, some of the things, you know, some of the things are things that I don't really feel that I have any ability whatsoever to discuss, such as, you know, alien abductions or after-death experiences, things like that. Because mathematics and science aren't really at a stage where they have acquired enough information to investigate them. But there are such things such as telepathy or ESP, which I think we're on the borderline or the threshold of being able to say something coherent about. And for instance, Einstein, who's certainly, you know, one of the great scientists of all times, was asked by a psychologist friend of his what he thought of telepathy, whether or not physics had anything to say about telepathy. And Einstein said, "It seems to me, at any rate, that we have no right from a physical standpoint to deny a priori the possibility of telepathy. For that sort of denial, the foundations of our science are too unsure and too incomplete." And he said this 80 years ago, but nonetheless, I think it's still true. And one of the things that, you know, that's sort of interesting to me is that there are currently top-flight scientists who believe that such phenomena as telepathy are actually real phenomena. For instance, There's a Nobel Prize winning physicist. His name is Brian Josephson, who believes that there's a connection between such things as quantum mechanics and telepathy. And if somebody, you know, if somebody who has a website who wants to sell you CDs or training seminars on how to get in touch with the paranormal said something like this, well, you got to be a little skeptical. But when a Nobel Prize winning physicist says this, this is a guy with a tremendous amount of knowledge and experience who's been, you know, who's been awarded the highest prize that the scientific community can award to an individual. And if he says there's something to it, we at least owe it to ourselves to keep an open mind.
I agree. And there's so much information in your book. And one of the reasons I enjoyed it is because you were coming from the side of the person who says this is black, this is white, this is turquoise, this is, you know, puce green.
Yeah, that's what science does.
And that's what science does. But I had to chuckle because you've written about a number of people in your book. And Arthur C. Clarke, who is a man that I always have felt, even though he had his own television show where he would debunk a lot of things, at the same time he couldn't explain a lot of things. And I wanted to quote from your book about Clarke's Law. If a distinguished but elderly scientist states that something is possible, he's almost certainly right. When he states that something is impossible, he is very probably wrong. And then you also make a comment about Clarke. He states implicitly that mathematicians, he considers mathematicians to be scientists, and physicists are elderly if they're more than 30 years old, but chemists and biologists get to postpone senility until they hit 40 and you're 70. I love that. I just thought, this is cool. But you're a man that I find, when going through your material about the paranormal equation, the questions you propose in the research that you've done to put this book together allow someone that if they've had experiences or if they are curious to look at different paradigms. And I think that that's the way this world always has been, and that's the way it's always going to be, because we're never going to know it all. It's not humanly possible. And depending on where you are, your environment, your own personal experiences, that's going to tent your perspective of whatever you're looking at. I don't care how brilliant you are. These are just the realities of the human condition. So when you have an opportunity to expand yourself, as you talk about one individual, Isaac Newton, and you said he would fight when people would challenge him, and he didn't always like sharing his ideas, but sometimes he would share his ideas anonymously. He just put them out there. So here was a man full of contradictions, yet he was ultimately extremely curious. He didn't discredit what he had learned, but he was always interested in expanding. And he, you give a quote by him. He said, "I seem only like a boy playing on the seashore and diverting myself in now and then finding a smoother pebble or a prettier shell than ordinary, while the great ocean of truth lay all undiscovered before me." Now, here is one man, and I know there are thousands of others that have this aspect of curiosity. What else are they going to discover? In your writing this book, because of the research that you came across regarding ESP, and they've researched this almost to the point of nauseam as far as I'm concerned, however, I understand the world of science. They want to put everything on page number 3 or page 45, and if the needs italics, it's going to have it, and this is replicatable over and over and over and over again. But so much of life, you cannot replicate in a laboratory. And therein lies the rub.
Yeah, Donna, you're absolutely right. And that, of course, is part of the problem. And one of the difficulties is that people seem to think that science will always, you know, has as its goal to deal with everything. And I'm not really sure that that's the case. science would science basically concerns itself with what it describes as the objective universe. And some things are objective and some things are not. The things that are objective, for instance, if you measure the temperature in a room and you find that the temperature in a room is 72 degrees, everybody who looks at the thermometer will see that it's 72 degrees. That's a fact about the room. That's an objective measurement. And a lot of the times that you are dealing with these phenomena that definitely have a subjective reality, if not necessarily an objective reality. I mean, you look at all the people who have had experiences that would qualify as paranormal to one sense in one extent or another. And for instance, the same doctor who told me that the universe consisted of known, unknown, and unknowable facts, he's a Harvard-trained doctor. He's done, you know, he's done top-flight medical research. And he has also told me that there have been several instances in his life where he's walked into rooms and known exactly what is going to be in the room, even though he's never been in the room before. And there are so many experiences of this type that what you have to say is there's certainly smoke here, there may be fire, and it's possibly a fire of the type that science will never be able to cope with, because there's a limit to what science can deal with. There's a limit to what all aspects of human knowledge can deal with. I was once talking with somebody, and he said, mathematics can understand everything, can't it? And I said, bad idea. Mathematics is like any other discipline. It doesn't matter whether you talk about philosophy, history, economics, science, what have you. All these disciplines are limited. There are it's just the nature of knowledge, the nature of the universe, that you can't know everything about everything, and some things are going to be forever beyond your ken. And the question is whether or not the phenomena that we describe as paranormal that have an individual aspect to them, whether or not it will ever be able to do experiments that will replicate them in a laboratory. And I've had conversations with an individual who's very much involved with research in this area, who believes that consciousness influences the various physical phenomena that there are in the universe. And that's an outlier view. It's not necessarily incorrect, but it isn't really something that has been demonstrated to the point that science accepts it, because science is very conservative. It's reluctant to change what it knows, but it will change if enough evidence is presented. And my contention, which is not the contention of this individual, is that not enough evidence has been presented to convince the majority of scientists. And that's what you have to do. And science will change its point of view, provided that it's presented with what it considers to be unequivocal evidence. And the difficulty with various things involving paranormal phenomena is that it's difficult to describe them objectively. And when you try to create objective experiments to measure stuff, it's out there on the margins of what would be considered to be a demonstrable proof. And my feeling is that you've got to continue to keep, I'm like Einstein, you've got to keep your mind open to something like this. But science is driven by funding. Most things are driven by funding because we've only got, we've got a limited amount of money. And if you're a scientist, and you want a grant to investigate something, you're much more likely to get a grant to investigate a cure for cancer, because if a company underwrites the grant and it can find something that will help people get over cancer or cure it, you make a fortune. You better the human condition. There's an immediate payoff. Whereas if you find there is such a thing as telepathy, and you need certain people to experience telepathy, or some people have it or some people don't, how are you going to monetize it?
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a very, very good point. And I know that there have been individuals like Russell Targ and some other people that you mention in the book who have been involved in research. But I want to share a fun story with you, and this goes back to when I was traveling to Hawaii. I would do speaking appearances, and I had radio and television shows that I did when I was over there. I had the occasion to have dinner with a group of scientists, and of course, I'm not a scientist. And when they found out the work that I did, they started telling me their own personal stories. And one scientist, his name was Bobby, and he worked at the school in or the university in Hawaii, in Honolulu. And he said he and some associates had been studying certain things regarding generating energy. And they had decided that they were going to see if they could do the same thing. And he said they actually ended up creating, it was a meditative process, they ended up creating an energy. And it so overwhelmed them, they said, we do not understand the natural laws that we have been implementing here. And so the energy that they were experiencing, and I'm using his words, was so overwhelming, they all said, we've got to stop this. We don't know what we're getting into. And I had to chuckle because there was a scientist many years before them in Hawaii. His name was Dr. Brigham, and there is a huge museum that's dedicated to them. And I can remember going into that museum and being so disappointed because this man had gotten to know the kahunas on the islands, and they were known for their specific talents. And they had a way of harnessing energy, and I'm simplifying it a bit. But what happened is that his protege, who came when he was getting ready to phase out of what he was doing and eventually passed away, he passed his mantle on to a gentleman called Max Freedom Long, who was quite young. And his statement to Max was, there is something in the way of natural law that these kahunas are using. I've seen it. I've seen it demonstrated. And I've used it myself, but I do not know as a scientist how to replicate it. And that so impressed me. Here are two different situations, both in this area of the world, both with people that are very, very much of the scientific venue, just like yourself, saying there is a natural law here. I do not understand what it is. I don't know how to replicate it, but I know it's there, and at this time, I'm not able to do anything with it. When you think of electricity, that must have been what the scientists of old really had to deal with. Electricity has always been around us, but until we learned how to harness it, we just were there with it. It wasn't something we knew how to utilize, and it took arriving to that point of thinking, of understanding that it was an energy that we could harness and make it work for us. And I think the skills, the different definitions of the paranormal often are something that can be explored in that like manner.
Well, I certainly hope that we, you know, that science, as I understand science, remains sufficiently open that it will at least look at these phenomena with the attitude that Einstein had. And I think that it's important that science does remain conservative in the sense that it's difficult for it to incorporate new ideas, because that means that the new ideas have to exceed a certain threshold of skepticism. And if they exceed that threshold of skepticism, that means that they're much more likely to be correct. Because what we want science to do is, of course, if you're a scientist, what you like is you investigate these things because there's just a joy and a curiosity in doing so. But from a practical standpoint of science being useful, you don't want to accept things until you're sure, at least to the extent that the scientific community of the moment accepts it, that what you say is really correct. And, of course, science can be wrong. But the nice thing about science is that science has this sort of built-in mechanism, namely experimentation, by which it can prove that it held an erroneous view. And this happens in science. I mean, I think that one of the problems, one of the reasons that scientists are generally uncomfortable with paranormal phenomena is, first, that there isn't this framework into which they can fit it. And that makes them uncomfortable. And of course, to a certain extent, it is like investigating electricity. Electricity, in fact, you know, when you talk about electricity, you know, you go back to the Greeks, and thunderbolts were thought to be the weapons of the gods instead of discharges of static electricity, as we now know them to be. And so as science learns more, it is able to explain more and also to harness things so that they'll be more useful to us. And that's, of course, what we want science to do. We want science to be at once an exploratory tool but also a pragmatic tool. But the fact is that if you close your mind to something and say this can't exist, well, unfortunately, you're gonna fail to realize a lot of the things that probably are true. And we don't know yet what the explanation for a lot of these phenomena are. But your scientist friend, Bobby, that's not uncommon among scientists. Russell Targ, certainly the man that you mentioned, has spent a large portion of time investigating this. Other scientists have too. And there was a survey of professors of science that took place in the mid-1990s, and over 50% of scientists believe that either ESP was established or was very, very likely. And this is not something you would expect, simply because there was a long series of experiments that was done by Dr. Joseph Rhine of Duke University over a period of 40 years. And basically, after 40 years, what he had was not convincing to the vast majority of the scientific community. There were some positive results, but they sort of tended to fade away. There was a lot of, if not outright fraud, there was dubious methodology associated with a number of his experiments. And so the scientific community couldn't accept it. But nonetheless, even knowing that, and my guess is that every scientist alive today knows about the Rhine experiments, or the vast majority of them. Nonetheless, for reasons, you know, for whatever reasons, over 50% of science professors in the 1990s felt that ESP was a reality or was very, very likely to be a reality. And my feeling is it's a reality, too. I don't feel it's a reality necessarily in the sense that other people do, because my feeling about ESP is that it's more an integration of things we sense, things we understand from our background, and things that we deduce either deductively or inductively, things that we, with our brain, because if there's one area of science that really we have light years to go before we understand it, even to the level that we understand electricity, that's brain research. The brain is remarkably complicated. It's taken 3.5 billion years to evolve human brains. And we've only really started on brain research maybe in the last 50 to 75 years. And so we don't understand at all what the brain is. I mean, we understand certain things about it, but we have so much more research to do before we can understand what the brain is. We don't have a good description of what consciousness is. We don't have a good description of what self-awareness is. All the things that we take for granted, philosophers have been puzzling over for thousands of years, and scientists have just started to investigate it. But they would be the first to say, we can't tell you what this is either. And if you can't understand such basic things as consciousness and self-awareness, how can you expect to really be able to come to grips with how consciousness or self-awareness might be affecting the universe?
That and much, much more can be questioned. I know we're just about out of time, and I wanted my listeners to know that in your book, you have marvelous studies. One was done with the Balinese people by Mrs. K.E. Mershon. And there's just so much information and detail that comes from that side, which is going to question, but at the same time makes you aware of how science is beginning to expand its own paradigms. Why? We have technology working for us, and there is a growth of thinking. The book is The Paranormal Equation. My guest is Jim Stein, James D. Stein, to be exact. He is a professor. He is a man that loves to question, isn't afraid of stepping into the unknown, in part maybe to answer some of the questions he has, because as life goes on, usually we end up with more questions than we do answers. Now, if you want to find out more about his book, you can go to Amazon, and there's also Paranormal Equation Stein, S-T-E-I-N, at Amazon. I believe that's what you told me, Jim. And yeah. So you can go there and check it out. Never be afraid to explore the unknown. The Paranormal Equation gives you a whole different positioning of thought, and I think it's a good thing. This is Donna Sebo. Dr. James Stein, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a delight having you.
Donna, I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. More good things to share. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm so delighted that you've been able to join me today. I want to let you know the phone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. Also, I want to let those of you know in California, Southern California, I'm going to be making a trip. I'll be in Santa Barbara as well as the Los Angeles Glendale area. I'm going to be putting out some information via an email blast probably today or tomorrow regarding that. That's going to be February the 4th through the 9th, and I'm looking forward to be back in my own home turf. Yes, I'm a California girl, so every once in a while I have a chance to go and visit. It always amazes me the changes there. But meanwhile, if you'd like to give me a call, telephone number to call in to is 888-627-6008. I would like to share a little bit of a story with you. I mentioned during the interview how I had the good fortune of having dinner with a couple of scientists when I was appearing in Honolulu many years ago, and how they had been doing experiments with energy and how they had produced an amount of energy that really, really surprised them. And it had to do with a combination of breathing exercises and a certain procedure, which he did not share with me. And he said, we're dealing with something here we can't understand. and I mentioned Dr. Brigham. However, I wanted to share something about Dr. Brigham because Max Freedom Long, who was his protege and studied with him up until the time Dr. Brigham passed away, he said, I was intrigued always by the story of one experience that this astute, highly recognized scientist had. Now, at the time Dr. Brigham was alive, there were still some of the old ones, the old kahunas, that had been trained. This has been something that was passed along by generations for who knows how many thousands of years, and they knew how to deal with energy. And one day, they wanted to put him, Dr. Brigham, the kahunas at that time, put him through an initiation ceremony where he was going to become a kahuna. Now, he, like any good solid Westerner, whenever you're going to be climbing mountains, etc., you're going to have on good hiking boots, right? Well, there were thick soles on the shoes, and laced up the front, just like our hiking shoes of today. Materials might have been a little different, but still, very thick, sturdy soles. Well, they took him into an area of volcanic activity, and there was a particular leaf that they took with them off of a plant, and at the moment it's escaping me. Maybe some of you would know that are familiar with the islands. But this was a leaf of one of the indigenous plants there. And they were to climb over these areas, and they had, you know, it's pretty hot. If ever you've been around a volcanic area, you're talking about places that have so much heat that just it'll melt anything. I mean, it's very dangerous. You have gases. It's not a place you go into helter-skelter because your life is endangered. Volcanic areas are alive. They create this tremendous presence, and it's to be respected. It is not something to be played with. Well, they took him into this particular area, and of course, he, as a Western scientist, is very cautious, but he had had associations with the kahunas for a number of years and had developed a trust and a deep respect for the laws that they had learned and that they utilized to make their lives better. And so he was on this climb. The kahunas went through some kind of a ritual, and they put these leaves, they bound these leaves onto the bottom of their feet. And they walked across these hot areas without any concern. Their feet never burned, nor did the leaves burn. Now, Dr. Brigham, the leaves were put underneath his shoes, and they laughed at him because he kept his shoes on. By the time they finished this climb through this very, very hot, hot area, and I'm summarizing it very quickly, the soles on his shoes were completely destroyed. But his feet were not burned, nor were the leaves that had been put on the bottom of his feet. How'd they do it? He never knew how they did it. And that's why I said when he made that comment to Max Freedom Long, who went on to write, I believe, 8 books about the laws that he had discovered, this is something that is very difficult because when you coming like Jim said in the interview, a scientist wants to be able to replicate something over and over again. Well, if they had known the kahunas, they might have been able to replicate it over and over again because they had done the replication of the practice over and over again until they really understood the laws. Now, who knows how that evolved? I don't. But it is something that as we become more aware, as we become more understanding, those bits of knowledge, and it is knowledge, will come forth. But if you do any reading and research on history, it seems like mankind goes through these cycles where in any one place, in any special environment, certain pieces of the knowledge are there and they're utilized, but they're very carefully monitored because there is this feeling that the human spirit is not wise enough to know how to deal with it carefully. That's why among many Indian tribes, Native American Indian tribes, there was a lot of training that went on because you had to discipline your mind, your body, your spirit, your emotions. This was very important. And this is not something that was taken lightly, because as you became aware of these laws, if you did not have control of this, you could do harm. That's where a lot of our myths and our fables have evolved from. Always of the warning that if you are not well balanced as a person, you can cause harm. And I think that this is something that's so fascinating to me. It continues to be fascinating to me. Regardless of what culture you study, you're always going to find that there is this awareness of something that is seemingly intangible, that is very tangible. It is there, it is real, and we can utilize it. And it seems like all of us have to go through this journey of life to become aware of what we have within ourselves so that we can move on to something even better. So I love the paranormal. I really do. I think it is absolutely fascinating. I think it's got its own yin and yang. I think that there are so many areas of ignorance that we have about this. There's fears and superstitions that are perpetuated. And so it is becoming awakened to what's within ourselves. And every single one of you, every single one of you listening, have the capacity to go through this journey without harm, and you should have fun with it. You should enjoy it, because it's going to enable you to have a richer life because of it. And you know what's even more special about it? What's even more special about it is life is not meant to be in a box. It's not humdrum. It is not uninteresting. It is not boring. It is fascinating. And I agree with Dr. Stein in that science can be a part of this as well. So if you have kids or if you yourself love to get into things like this, keep an open mind. Be aware that there is something so utterly phenomenal about this experience called life that you never have to be bored a day in your life. And if you are bored, then ask yourself, what can I do different? Let me try something different. Check out your books from your public library. Reach into areas of life that you have always had curiosity about. Everyone has curiosity. It's being unafraid to explore it. That's part of the adventure of life. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008 is the telephone number. By the way, tomorrow will be an open mic day, so it will be a time, any time during the hour, you'll be able to chat with me. Also, I'm going to be talking with June Bijou. We're going to be talking about attitude reconstruction. Whoa, we all can use an improvement on attitudes. Let's face it, we all have stinking days where our attitudes really should be put in the garbage disposal and ground up and flushed away. But those days are healthy days. Because without those days, you cannot possibly reach for something better. So we're going to be talking about that. And then on Thursday, vampires in the United States. Oh, boy. This is a wonderful subject. One of my favorite authors, Bob Curran, who is a historian, a researcher. He has written so many books about so many odd and unique things. We're going to be talking about that on Thursday. And then the business of wanting more. Brian Gast is going to be my guest on Friday. The business of wanting more. Now, when I saw that title, I thought, why do I want to talk to someone about getting more stuff? Is that really what I want to talk about? Mm-mm-mm-mm. It's not going to be about getting more stuff at all. It's going to be about living life with more enjoyment of where you are right now. And even more than that. So we've got a dynamic list of guests, and I want to say I just invite you, tell your friends about the show, come along with me and enjoy these fabulous people who have put their knowledge, their experiences into the written word for you to enjoy. Donna Sebo here. I'm going to come back with some ways to save money, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and thank you for staying with me, 888-627-6008. If you'd like to chat instead, I'm open to it. Give me a buzz. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to share some suggestions with you. If you're somebody that's on a budget, and oh, if you're like me, it seems like when things go wrong with appliances, dishwasher, vacuum cleaners, whatever, they all seem to go out at the same time. Don't ask me why, but it seems to be that way in the Sebo household. Well, lots of times when we're having challenges like this, buying a major appliance like a refrigerator, a stove, even electronic items, I'll tell you what, they have some pretty hefty price tags on them. You're looking at $2,000 maybe for the kind of stove that you'd want, or a refrigerator. Now, given this item will last you for 15, 20, 30 years, you know I have a refrigerator that's in my garage that's over 30 years old. That's right. And it works beautifully. It works beautifully. It hasn't had to be repaired once. Amazing. And this is something, though, when they go, they're gone. So what can you do? If you're wanting to really be very energy efficient and you also want to be efficient with the money in your wallet and your savings account, you don't want to deplete your entire savings account to upgrade a refrigerator, television, or whatever. Here are some tips that were passed along to me that I really was not aware of, and I know you can find discount places, etc., but what if you really want something that is refurbished and you know it's done properly? Here are some items. Computers. Oh my goodness, how much money do we spend on computers? Well, Dell has an outlet store where you can find brand new laptops, notebooks, monitors, printers, all kinds of things. The only thing that's wrong with them is that the outside casing might have a dent in it or be scratched. They'll be anywhere from 20 to 40% less than what they originally sell for. If you'd rather have a Mac, you can check out macofalltrades.com/B-grade, and it's going to show you all kinds of stuff that really is brand new, but it's just been dinged. And when it comes to appliances, check Sears outlets, washers, dryers, fridges, all kinds of appliances. They are hundreds of dollars less than what they normally sell for. Now, go to SearsOutlet.com, and you can also get a what they call a scratch and dent appliance from appliancesdepot.com/appliances/scratch-dent-appliances. And you're going to pay for shipping, but you could save hundreds of dollars there. Electronics, same thing. You can go to outlet.crutchfield.com, and that's outlet.crutch, C-R-U-T-C-H, field.com. Bestbuy.com, you can use the store locator, and then you'll find things that have been discounted. Remember, they've got to get rid of this inventory. And so if you know about these outlets, you can check them out. Guess what about cars? Anyone Anyone knows that if you get a brand new car, you drive it off the lot, it's 50% less in value automatically. So you don't have anything that's really going to necessarily hold its true value through the years unless you have one of those rare vehicles that do. But by golly, you can check out demo cars. I had a girlfriend who wanted to get a specific type of vehicle. She lives up in Alaska, and she has to have a real hardy car. You don't want to be driving around a Cadillac up there, especially during winter. This is rugged turf that you're going to be going over. So she decided on a particular vehicle. She needed a vehicle of a certain size, and she shopped around. Well, the prices were just way out of her budget line. And she kept going back into this one dealer. She figured out what she wanted. She knew the color she wanted. And she kept going back to this one dealership. And the guy said, well, you ready to buy? And he wasn't a high-pressure salesman. She said, nope, just not in my budget. As it turned out, it was about a year after she had been researching everything, come to the decision about what she wanted. And she was online. She did all kinds of things. The salesman called her and he said, you know, we have a demo. It's not in the color you want, but it has all the goodies that you've been looking for. Would you be interested? She paid $15,000 less because they wanted to move the inventory. So, demo cars, check them out. Unless someone is offering you a car that's painted bright orange that has plaid green and black and orange interior. That doesn't work very well. At least it didn't for me. Yes, I had an experience with a vehicle like that years ago. I'll never forget it. It was a demo. I could have gotten it for very, very low price, but I took one look at that and I said, sorry, I can't drive that car. I couldn't even sit in the car. Anyhow, this is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Everyone wants to feel like, one, they have a purpose in life, and two, that what they do makes a difference. I don't know of anyone that does not want to have that feeling of purpose and value about their life, period. I've never met anybody that didn't want to have that. What if you were a housekeeper? Yes, what if you cleaned houses for a living? Now, interestingly enough, there are people that would look down on somebody, feeling that it was a very menial job. I got news for you. Those men and women that are really good at cleaning, they make really good money. Because if they do it well, they are valued tremendously by people. I know a guy who became a multimillionaire doing floors, keeping them sparkling clean in Kmart, Target, and some other big stores. It's true. He was my next-door neighbor. He was a multimillionaire. Cleaning floors. Well, there's a wonderful woman by the name of Kara Anderson. Cleaning, she thoroughly enjoyed. She said it really was important to her to always know that when she finished cleaning a house, that that owner would come into the house and just go, wow, this is just fabulous. She had a great sense of pride in her work. However, something happened to Kara. She ended up getting breast cancer, and she just went through a very, very difficult time with it. She ended up having to have a double mastectomy. Now, she was having a very tough time. And she said, when you go through a trauma like this, it's going to make you think differently about your life and about what you do. Well, she had a nice group of people that received emails from her on a regular basis. And she kept them appraised with what was going on with her. And she said one of the biggest things she realized that kept her balanced was making sure that she kept things in order, that she had a nice, clean, tidy environment. And she said, I came up with this idea. I knew how much it meant to me. I went through such a trauma, and an idea hit her. What What is one of the most important things to anybody? Having order in their life in one way or another. In a clean house, a clean environment is very important. She came up with a title called Cleaning with a Meaning. You can check out her site, cleaningwithameaning.com. She said, I feel that I want to contribute to someone else's betterment in some way. And cleaning is what I know. I know how to do it the best way possible, and it brings me a lot of satisfaction. Well, there was someone that sent in a request. They had a need to have their house cleaned, but they couldn't afford it. And the mother that had this done, she had a child that had cystic fibrosis, and this child needed constant care. She just couldn't keep up with the housework. So she said, I will donate. I will give this to you. You know what? The word spread about what Kara was doing. And to this day, there are people that are submitting requests. And do you know what? She ended up contacting other cleaning services across the country so she could help other families. And do you know what? A lot of cleaning services throughout the United States have opted to do the same thing. They donate to help a family, an individual, get their place in order. An incredible thing. This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, I know we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. Within you is the greatness that is daring to be born. Whatever it takes, let it have breath, because you're very special. Join me tomorrow, open mic day. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.